Amen. Good morning, church. I have a confession. Okay. Who said uh-oh? Thank you, Judy. Sound like my mother. Uh-oh. Heard that a lot. But the confession is that I am a creeper. How many know what I mean by creeper? Okay, not many, so I get to introduce you to that, all right? It's a popular word used today for describing someone who checks out information about someone they've never met but want to find out about. That makes me a creeper. Now, don't get up and leave. Just wait a minute, okay? When you look at, for example, a Facebook post, and they don't know you, you've never really met them, but you're checking them out. You are creeping. You with me so far? How many of you have heard of Facebook? Let's start there, all right? Let's just start at the beginning, all right? So you're looking at a profile of somebody, man, woman, doesn't matter. They've got a profile on Facebook, and you're checking out the profile. Pictures and details about about who they are. You're what's called on the street today a creeper, right? Which, let's just agree on the front end, that's straight up creepy anyway. I mean, now that I've confessed to creeping, stay with me as I share some secrets that I've learned stalking this person for over a year. All right? Now, he spent 40 years on a job. 40 years, a career. Working a job where his success was hotly debated. Then, and still is. During his four decades, that's 40 years, on the job, in a career where he, like most careers, clocked in and clocked out daily, 40 years of that. His boss reported that he went wherever he was told to go. He did whatever he was told to do, and he said whatever he was asked to say. Full disclosure. He did not like his job. All right, your boss isn't watching. How many of you have struggled with liking your job at one point or another? Okay, all right. So we get that. He didn't like his job, but here's the other half of that sentence. He did it anyway. Here's where critics disagree when it comes to assessing his success. In his long career, I just have to say it because it's true, he had no results. Seriously, 40 years, zip, no results. Nobody liked him. If you're taking notes, would you write this one down? It's big. It's big in a day of likes. With me, that's another internet expression. How many likes do you have? He had none. There'd be no likes and a ton of dislikes. He was unfriended all the time, all the time. You know what that means? it's another expression. You know, people friend you, you know, hey, I want to be your friend. And then the way they hurt you on the internet is they go, oh, I'm unfriending you. Like, whatever, you know, who cares? So nobody liked him, but here's more. Nobody listened. On his last day on the job, the place where he worked burned to the ground. The fire just leveled the place. And lots of people that day died. And a whole bunch of others were driven from their homes. Some of them never to return again. They died out of town. So I've just described Jeremiah. in the Bible. I've spent a year creeping on him. I've studied him. And now you know, okay? Studied him a lot more than a year, but this last year it's just been a fascination to me. The prophet who served as God's spokesman to the southern kingdom known as Judah. It was already well into the divided kingdom. After Solomon left, it split north and south. North had died. They had been exiled to Assyria way back in 722. 100 years later, Jeremiah shows up, 627. And he's God's spokesman for these 40 years, final years, of the southern half of the kingdom, known as Judah. So, he was a communicator. That's what first grabbed my attention. Which meant for him in his day, and it's still got lots of crossover to our day, he presented information to people about God. He presented information that was vital to the people who heard it, but who completely ignored it. So I need to stop and make a connection that's fairly obvious, perhaps, for some of you. I, too, am a communicator. So I've spent not quite 40 years, 38 years, doing what I've sometimes referred to as color commentary on the Bible. The Bible's what I'm here to communicate, and that's why you come. I don't have great ideas, but God sure does. And so I'm a communicator that has spent weekly effort to cast information out, to communicate it to people, you who fill this room every Sunday, on behalf of God. Some of this is easy to communicate, and I present it that way, and I think if you were to tell me on a given Sunday, you'd say, often, that was easy to hear. That I took that in. It made sense to me, and I feel good about it. But some of this is not easy at all. In fact, it's very difficult to say, and just as difficult, I'm certain, for you to hear. I remember one Sunday I finished preaching, and it beat me up, and I was wrung out, and I was at the door, which is kind of a dangerous combination. You know, you got nothing left in your tank. You just spent it all, and then I was at the door, and I remember one guy saying, you know, I didn't realize it was tongue in cheek at the moment, but he says, you know, if you keep preaching like that, I'm gonna have to find a new church. And I just, you know, I wanted to jump out of a tall building, you know, and just go, this is ridiculous. And then he started smiling. He gives me this big, you know, man hug, you know, and said, you know, I'm messing with you. Don't ever, ever stop preaching that way, was what he followed with. Because he could see his first joke totally missed its mark, right? Totally. But anyway. So here's a more personal. I just got to tell you this, which helps you understand my connection, okay? If I go give a message and don't get a minimal amount of affirmation, it's hard. It hurts. That's why it's really very important for me when Debbie's here and my parents are here, and neither of them are this morning. So I'm in real trouble, okay? So, no, actually, my wife's next door serving in children's ministry, so she heard this sermon at home already. So, but on a given Sunday, my parents find something good to say, and same with my wife. So that helps me. But get this, I want you to understand. If I go a month or more, and there's nothing coming. In fact, the crowd thins. The numbers of people showing up are smaller and smaller. I just got to confess to you, I'm starting to question my calling. I just go, wow, Lord, maybe it's over. Maybe it's done. And then I got to go a step further and tell you, if you can look at the, you know, a sermon series. If I go for a whole sermon series like this last summer, and the most memorable thing anybody says to me is, you know, that was a yawner, dude. I about had it with you talking that way. Or, say that again and I will kill you. I will cut you, right? Now, some of you are going, man, Steve's way out there. Well, okay, for the record, on one particular day, when Jeremiah had finished his message, ready for this? It was a the Lord said message. On this particular day, you know the response was? Kill him. Check it out. Chapter 26, verse 8. When Jeremiah had finished his message, saying what? Everything the Lord had told him to say. That's a pretty safe place to be in my thinking. Everything the Lord told him to say. Then the priests, the prophets, and the people at the temple mobbed him. Now that by itself would sound really great. Maybe it was just a looking for an autograph mob, right? But what follows tells me otherwise. Kill him. And I would raise my voice, but it would bother you. They shouted it. So he knocks himself out. This is just one day in a 40-year career. Gives it all, and it's really hard to hear, and it's really unpopular, but it's from God. Imagine that. You did exactly what God told you to do. You went where God told you to go. You said what God told you to say, and the response? Right? I'm not making this stuff up. And it's not an exaggeration to say that the prophet lived out his entire career communicating information that was unwelcomed and unwanted by his audience. Students of the two books that bear his authorship, which is of course Jeremiah and Lamentation, will be hard pressed to identify a single sermon that he preached that was met with a favorable response of applause by the audience. It was lukewarm at best. In my appraisal of Jeremiah's work, and I looked it over. I know you trust me. I looked it over deeply. I often would close my Bible, and I would feel like I just saw the latest episode in the hit TV show Dirty Jobs. This is exactly what I did. I thought, that was a thankless, dirty job. Nobody liked it. Nobody listened. I know some of you moms are saying, that's my job, you know. It gets better, Mom, I hope. All right. So that said, and I really want to be brutally honest on the front end, but there's something else. Here's a quick impression of the veteran prophet that must not be dismissed. And that is, according to the most important audience, and it's debt, we can rule out what it isn't. It was not priests, cross them out. It was not prophets, cross them out. It wasn't even people, cross them out. The most important audience of all, the audience of one, God. Now, if you haven't started writing anything, you got to write this down. God's appraisal is that Jeremiah was incredibly successful. I just gave you a ton of reasons why, if he was looking for a job as my successor here, you'd be smart to pass on him. He can't hold an audience, and the ones he holds want to kill him when it's all done. Imagine if I came, yeah, hey, tell us about Steve. What's he like? Well, you know, he just puts people out. They're just sound asleep by the end of his sermons. And the ones you stay awake for, you're just ticked off when you leave. You know, which truck is he driving? I want to slash that guy's tires. You know, you're thinking that kind of stuff, right? You'd be smart if you're on the search committee to go, no, find somebody else. Find an entertainer. Well, I guess you found one, right? I'm hot. Why am I so hot right now? Okay. I'm burning up. Here we go. I'm burning up. I'm relating to Jeremiah right now, right? Okay. Please make note of this. Jeremiah, if God were to step up right now and say, Steve, you're trying, but here, let me do it for you. He's incredibly successful. He possessed the qualities that God looks for in all leaders, especially those who communicate truth, but it's true of all leaders. Now, the Apostle Paul possessed it as well, so I want to point it out in his life, okay? It's a real simple verse. 1 Corinthians chapter 4, verse 1 says, now it's required that those who've been given a trust, God is the giver of this trust, and it's been given to you to do something with it. The trust in Jeremiah's case was be a communicator, a voice for God to the people. As a pastor, it's being a voice in a bunch more. But for you, it applies too. What is your trust? You've got to think that way. Don't think of this as a sermon for pastors or church leaders. It's for all of us. And so, it's required for all of us who've been given a trust to prove ourselves faithful. A servant must do what the master tells him to do. A servant must say what the master tells him or her to say. A servant must go where the master tells her to go. That is faithful. Results aren't part of success for God's servants. I want you to write that down. I think I'm going to call it back up on a page here. No, it's the subtitle of this series. Would you write that down? Results aren't part of the matrix or the measurement of success for God's people. Please write that down. It's huge. Because the subtitle of this series was chosen with great thought. Effort, obedience, and endurance are measurements of success from the audience of one, Jesus Christ. Okay? So results are not. You can fill a church with people and do it poorly and do it without God's blessing just because you're a show. Or you can really walk faithfully with God and have very little audience or impact at all. You see the difference here? From God's perspective, which matters. From God's perspective, success is not measured by the results that we typically look for. Big numbers. Effort, yes. Obedience, all the way. Endurance, Jeremiah needed plenty of that, and he showed up with it. Ask Moses, by the way. You and I, let's just agree on what we know of Moses. Okay, this isn't just a Jeremiah talk. This is broader to get us into Jeremiah. So Moses, we know that he led God's people. And he led them from an eastern location in Egypt. And they moved their way to the eastern shore of the Jordan River, poised to enter the land. God said, you can't enter the land, Moses. Joshua will do that for you. But that, we typically look at Moses and think, wow, he really did it. He led those people for 40 years wandering in the wilderness, and they were belly aching, grumpy, hard to please people. That was a big deal. But can I tell you what I think puts him down as a legendary leader? When God, at 80 years old, went and got him and said, hey, I got a job for you to do. God, at 80 years old, did you hear me? 80 years old. I got something for you to do, Mo. And come with me, and I want you to go to Pharaoh, Mo, and I want you to say, let my people go. All right? So there you go. All right? So, how many would be willing to do that once? Very few. A few would. You might die trying, but you would. You'd say, yeah, sign me up, right? But how many would do it twice? Especially if he got really mad the first time, the Pharaoh. Moses didn't just do it once or twice. He did it 10 times. And every single time, the response was a flyback, no! It wasn't Pharaoh going, no, not today. They're still my people. It was Pharaoh going, you're pushing me to the edge, Mo. You're going down. You keep this up. Sick and tired of hearing it from you. 10 times. Moses persisted, and so did Jeremiah. What's it take for you to give up? Don't you think that's a fair question? I think it is. A strong headwind? Maybe. Resistance? We could look into a story, we will in coming weeks. Outright opposition? Rejection? Jeremiah faced all the above, but he stayed the course. Really important. Stayed the course. I gave Jeremiah God's, this is my label, super successful label. For different reasons than people define success today. Let me give you 3 of them quickly and we'll be done. The first, he was a voice for God when people weren't interested in what God had to say. Would you write that down? He was a voice for God, that's one thing. But he happened to be a voice for God when people weren't interested in what God had to say. That's a harder audience. It's a tougher place to serve. He prophesied during the final 4 kings of Judah. You could add the 5th, Josiah, but they overlapped only by a few years. The last 4 kings were decidedly awful. They were terrible. And there's a reason why Judah just slid right into the tanker and they were gone. Babylon took them over. Nebuchadnezzar hauled them out, burned the city. You'll get to that in a sec. At the end of Zedekiah's reign, he was the last king, of course, in the south. The temple burned. I often picture Jeremiah on that last day sitting on the steps of the temple, weeping as he did all the time. You can't see me in the back, but he sat on the steps, pouring his heart out because his tear tank was empty, and cried as he smelt smoke and looked over his shoulder to see the temple burning to the ground. Oh, but the fire wasn't limited to the temple. The city burned down. Houses, places of business, lives ruined. On his last day, all right? And there's more. Many people died that day. And a large number of people were kicked out of their city and dragged against their will east 700 miles or so to Babylon. Terrible time. This was a time where people turned a deaf ear to God and His truth. Making it, now think about that. People have turned a deaf ear to God and His truth. Am I describing anything we know today? Well, that makes it dangerous to speak up or speak out for God. So guess what? Most people didn't. There's a lot of logic in most people. Hold on. No one wants to hear this. And it's risky if I say something. Conclusion? I'll be quiet. Yet in this setting, Jeremiah spoke out. You likely heard the words from Edmund Burke. I quote him in the header on the outline today. But here's another quote that you might be more familiar with. "The only thing necessary," said Burke, "for the triumph of evil is for good men, and may I add women, to do nothing." Proverbs 24, verses 10 through 12 agree with what I just said. If you do nothing in a difficult time, your strength is limited. If you're slack in the day of distress, New American says, your strength is limited. Rescue those being taken off to death and save those stumbling towards slaughter. If you say, "But we didn't know about this, had no idea," won't he who weighs hearts consider it? Won't he who protects your life now? Won't he repay a person according to his work? Jeremiah defied the trend of the times and spoke out as God directed him. And hear me now. In doing so, he gets that successful, super success label. In a time when people didn't want to hear it, he said it anyway, because God said it. I want to align Jeremiah, as I often did in my study, with a New Testament character most of us are a little more familiar with, the Apostle Paul. And he admonished Timothy to do the same thing. It was his understudy. Timothy would be the person he handed the baton to as Paul retired, went to heaven, actually. Then Timothy steps up. I quoted Timothy in the baptism. One of the words that Paul spoke to Timothy, don't sweat it that you're young. Let no one look down on your youthfulness. But in speech, conduct, love, faith, and purity, show yourself an example of those who believe. Well, 2 Timothy 4 is the last chapter of this correspondence where Paul is giving Timothy instructions. And it just so happens at that time in the first century that Timothy was asked to speak out, like Jeremiah, when people didn't want to hear it. This is how it's recorded in 2 Timothy chapter 4. "Preach the word," Paul's counsel to Timothy. "Be ready in season and out of season. Rebuke, correct, encourage with great patience and teaching. For the time is going to come," I quote this so many times to myself, "when people will not tolerate sound doctrine. They will no longer endure sound doctrine, but according to their own desires, they will multiply teachers for themselves because they have an itch to hear what only they want to hear." It's not done. "They will turn aside from the truth, and they will turn to myths. They're not interested in the truth because it's hard to hear." It was for Jeremiah's audience. It will be for Timothy's audience, and it is today. He finishes, "They will turn aside to myths, but as for you, exercise self-control in everything." I wish these two words weren't in there, but they are. Endure hardship. It will come with it. Do the work I've given you to do of telling. Do the work of an evangelist and fulfill your ministry. So to do this, it cost Jeremiah greatly. I'm going to back up there. All right. I've already captured that a little bit. When somebody yells out or a group of people kill him at the end of a message, that's hard stuff. So he was persecuted and his life was repeatedly threatened. You want to make note of a couple of chapters to read this week? Way beyond the hurt of a message being rejected or ignored, his opponents sought to silence him completely. So they did things like they hatched numerous plots to kill him. Chapter 11 would be a good read on that. Chapter 16, he was lonely. Can you imagine? The friendless leader of God, servant of God. He was lonely. He was whipped, chapter 20 tells us, and he was in prison, chapter 37 talks about, and so much more. Again, comparisons to the Apostle Paul are appropriate. Paul describes the stuff that he went through ad nauseum. It went on and on and on. Look at Paul's words here from 2 Corinthians chapter 11. I worked much harder, been in prison more frequently, flogged more severely, been exposed to death again and again. Man, I read this fast because time's short. Every one of those things. If I'm flogged once, whatever flogged means, it doesn't sound good. If I'm exposed to death once, do you get what I'm saying? Let's be real here. Just want to hang it up. Go, the cost is too great. 5 times I receive 40 minus 1, 39 lashes. They're beating the stuffing out of me, Paul is saying. This just went on and on. 3 times I was beaten with rods. I was stoned. Not the kind in Portland, but I was stoned with rocks. You know, I was shipwrecked. It went on and on like this. I spent a lot of nights in open sea. And you want dangers? They're all there. Dangers from rivers. Dangers from bandits, my own fellow Jews, Gentiles, cities, in the country, at sea, and in danger of false brethren. He's not done. Then he says, I labored and toiled and have often gone without sleep. I get grumpy without sleep. Is it obvious? No. I've known hunger, he says, and thirst, gone without food. I have been cold. I've been naked. And then on top of all of that, I'm constantly thinking of the welfare of the churches. That burdened a lot of Paul's thinking. What does it cost you and me to follow Jesus? Popularity? I don't know. Relational harmony? Somebody doesn't like you because you like Jesus. It could be. A job? Financially, it's cost you. Are some of you saying it's cost me nothing? Because I'm not suggesting this morning, I don't think the Bible teaches, go look for trouble as a Jesus lover. Go look for trouble and prove how much you love Jesus. That's not good theology. Trouble will find you. But if your story is trial and trouble free, I just have a question. How do you explain that? 2 Timothy 3:12 says, indeed, all who desire to live godly in Christ Jesus, all will be persecuted. We're out of time. I want to leave you with an impression that really grabbed my attention. It's in Matthew 16. It's a place called Caesarea Philippi. It's at the base of Mount Hermon up in North Galilee. We were there. There's a Greek god Pan, this false god that was worshipped up there. Jesus gathered one night. There's a lot of talk about Jesus, a lot of scoop on the street about him. So Jesus asked the disciples, hey, what's the talk on the street? What's the scuttlebutt out there about me? And the guy said, well, you know, people aren't really clear. They're not really sure. But there's a verse in Matthew 16, verse 14, that says this. Some say John the Baptist, others say Elijah, and still others, Jeremiah, or one of the prophets. I never saw that until studying Jeremiah. I always say, Lord, make me more like you. But somehow, some way, people saw something in Jesus that reminded them of Jeremiah. I can't tell you all that is. Maybe it's not even a question that needs to be answered. The point is, The Bible links Jeremiah and Jesus pretty closely. Close enough for people to say, you know, Jesus, some people think you're Jeremiah. Difficult as it is to comprehend, they wondered, looking at Jesus, has Jeremiah actually come back? It's a high accolade. Someone has said, more is known of the life of Jeremiah than any of the other prophets, and his life is far more significant than his teachings. That's what I want to discover together in this series stretch before us, and appreciate and take to heart why it is that God sees Jeremiah as the most, probably one of the most successful humans to ever live. Pray with me and we'll be done. God, I want to give up small ambitions for success that our culture has defined. It's on our minds. If I can make so much money, I can get so many things, I can look like a big deal. That's a long list of ways that our culture defines success. But I want to give up on that. I want to be less interested in that and trade it for something that's infinitely better. Success the way you define it, Lord. True success. Take us higher. Take me higher. Cause us to not settle for small success, but to be truly drawn into and interested in your kind of success. Thank you for teaching us this morning. As we respond to you in song, help us to do it with gratitude, for the confident conviction we have that you'll help us be people of effort and obedience and endurance. For the glory of Jesus Christ, I pray. Amen. Amen. Would you stand with me? We're going to sing a final song, and ushers are going to come and gather the morning offering and prayer request. Would you turn those in at this time? Then we have a special invitation I'll save for the end of this song. We'll be on our way.